You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Roger had the camera up to his eyes, and he stumbled and fell. I rode across the creek, got off the horse, and took my rifle out of the scabbard in case I had to make a shot.
For 20 minutes with my spotlight, we watched these two creatures.
I'm romantic. I would like Bigfoot to exist. I've met people who swear they've seen Bigfoot.
It's a very ominous feeling. First of all, everything is one color. It's like a dark pewter color. There are no right angles anywhere. There was almost nothing other than a small foldable hatchway that looked recognizable. Everything was really unworldly.
The other option is that these entities are in fact hybrid beings. They are some sort of a hybrid that's coming in and out of our dimension.
My arm contacted him. He just fell back. Very unexpectedly easy into the other one. And I rolled off the table in the other direction. And they came around the table and the three of them were coming towards me.
The Bigfoot mystery, I've come to see it as a microcosm of a much bigger mystery. And the mystery is who we are in this universe. And they said, well, why don't we have this thing in the zoo? And he said, you don't have this in the zoo because it doesn't want to be in the zoo. I just think we limit ourselves so much by making it fit into what we can see, taste, touch, smell, and hear. And we can't see, taste, touch, smell, and hear 99.9% of reality.
We have an amazing guest tonight. We're actually interviewing an author, a self-published author, first-time author, a book called Tomato Fields. His name is Tim Moon. Welcome to our show, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are y'all?
I'm feeling pretty good, man. It's a good day, you know, after work, you know, it's dreary. It's hot sometimes. It's very humid where we're at. We're not used to that. We're used to dry weather in Utah. So it definitely feels a little intense, but I'm excited.
Well, it's really hot in Texas. I've lived here for a while, but I think this is the hottest summer I remember. And so it's hot. It's when it's into the hundreds in Texas, it's really hot.
What are we supposed to do? Like, what do you do when you're driving around? I mean, what happens if your AC stops working? Like, how do people survive out there?
Well, I mean, most people, blood's a little thinner. So if they have to be outside for a while, they can, but that doesn't mean they want to be, unless they're at a lake or a swimming pool. But yeah. I work inside, so if I was a contractor, I'm not sure how those guys do it. I guess they just get – their blood just gets thinner and they get used to it. I've heard people from down further south in Texas, Brownsville area, come up north just a couple – 200 or 300 miles, and then they don't like it because it's too cold up here.
No, we're not here. What's funny about that is, like, there's definitely an adaptability about humans, right? It's kind of cool because this could be a segue into what we're talking about here. But I feel like there's just like us, you know, we wear t-shirts when it's, you know, 60, maybe 55 degrees outside, and throw our windows down because we're so used to cold winters, right? But other people from California come over, Texas, an example. And they're like, wow, you guys are wearing t-shirts, driving around with windows down. You got the sunroof, you know, the convertibles open. It's like, yeah, adaptability for sure.
If I have to wear a coat, I feel like I'm not happy. I just don't like it. I feel like, and then when it gets cold, I mean, down into the 40s here, I feel like I'm freezing from the inside out. So yeah. I just can't take it anymore.
But that reminds me of the kid from Christmas Story. Remember where they put like 20 coats on him and he can't even put his arms down.
Yeah, that's what I want to do, is put massive coats on.
Well, cool, Tim. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. I apologize.
This summer's hot, though. It's making me rethink how much I like hot weather, but probably still going to stick with it.
Yeah, no, and we're going to be visiting Texas a lot. Actually, if you don't mind, I guess before we get really going here, I don't know if you mind giving just a little backstory about yourself and kind of who you are and like some of the stuff you like to do and all that kind of stuff, if you don't mind, and just kind of.
No problem. I'm a longtime teacher and an administrator in private schools. And I have been in Austin, Texas for about 8 years and then different other parts of the country for another 15 or 20. And I'm doing mostly administration right now, but I've done a lot of teaching in the past as well. I teach history and government and economics and rhetoric and logic, and I often talk about Bigfoot with my kids.
I was going to ask about that.
At least when they ask, I don't force it on anybody. But however, as a historian, I've always been interested in the topic of Bigfoot, and it probably started when I was a kid and I saw the movie Legend of Boggy Creek, which is a famous cult film about a Bigfoot type creature that was attacking some people in a cabin in Arkansas in a Boggy Creek area. And it became a massive hit. It's just a cult film now, but it still makes money. It was just intriguing, and I watched that movie, and ever since I believed in Bigfoot. I don't know why, it just seemed real to me.
Well, didn't they have in that movie, that was about Falk, Arkansas, and in that movie, by the way, I finally watched about half of it because I'd never seen it before, and it wasn't our generation necessarily, but
we're avid Bigfoot people for sure.
But yeah, I finally watched it and it was very well done. And like, I think they had like interviews with some of the real people, obviously the real people and stuff that had some experiences and stuff. So it was kind of beyond its time a little bit when it came to
way beyond its time. Yeah, they did a great job with that. And it's just turned into a huge hit. It's a little hokey by our standards, but I mean, for $1 million, I mean, it's amazing what they did. And it really captured my imagination. And from then on, I felt like there's probably something to this thing. So I've always been curious about it. And then about 20 years ago, I really started doing the research because I'm thinking more as a historian and thinking, you know, all of these reports that people are giving from all over the world and in different countries, different religions, different ethnic groups, different belief systems and worldviews, and different languages. I mean, that's, and they're all roughly reporting the same thing. The animals act the same. They roughly look the same. They're bigger or smaller, depending on the area you see. Some are more aggressive, but there's a lot of the same reports. How is that possible?
Right.
You can't get people to do what you want them to do as it is, but to get them from all these other countries. So it's just too weird to not exist, to not be something. There's too much smoke to not have some kind of fire somewhere. And I can't put my finger on exactly what it is yet. I can only guess, but something's out there, and people got to take the heads out.
What I feel, Tim, I'm with you on that. I feel like this could get into a lot of the things we want to talk about when it comes to like the native tribes and the different things. Like, all of them have a very similar thing, right? And I think a very similar story with a Bigfoot in it. And they call them different things, you know, the wood creatures, the forest helpers, like all these different lines, right?
Yeah, the devil. Not all the tribes felt that good about them.
No, you're right. And I think a lot of that could be like, you know, encroaching on food sources, maybe encroaching on like a lot of things, right? The hunting is a huge part of a lot of native tribes. So I wonder if it's just a lot of that. Maybe snatching up kids. I hope that's not the case, you know, but you've heard stories, the missing 411.
Could be.
So I'm with you on that. And I think how can it not be true, right? At this point, when it comes to those types of things. And I wish people would really look into this subject a lot more. I know that the government likes to, we can get into the government stuff, but I know they like to suppress things, you know, and especially if it's something that doesn't fit their paradigm. I love using that word, you know, but
yeah.
I feel like, I mean, what do you think about all that? Do you think that there's like some suppression? Do you think that there's, you know, what's the big picture, I guess, when it comes to Bigfoot? Do you think there's a...
I think there's suppression. I think the Bigfoot mystery, I've come to see it as a microcosm of a much bigger mystery. And the mystery is who we are in this universe. We think we're the center of it, but we're not the center of it. We're a very small planet in a very small solar system in a very small galaxy amongst billions of galaxies with trillions of stars and trillions of planets that can hold life like we have here. Oh. And over a vast area of 92 billion light years. So we are not probably alone in this universe. And it's very likely that it's not a purely materialistic, mechanistic universe, that there's a spiritual nature to it. And it's like if they say paranormal, all paranormal means is that you don't understand it.
Right.
It's beyond what you're normally used to. But I think we want everyone to be trapped in this materialistic world where our five senses are all we have. And we are only what we see, taste, smell, touch, and hear. And that's how a lot of people make money.
Right.
And I kind of think that there's a profit in them keeping us stupid.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tim. Honestly, let me just tell you this, man. I feel like, yeah, we're going down rabbit holes now. But I feel like
I don't mind. Right. These are important things.
You got kindred spirits. I will say this, you know, I don't know if you feel this way, but you know, you're looking at these holiday seasons, and all these holiday seasons come up again. It's like all about spending so much money, and all about like stimulating the economy. And I just look around at people and I'm always like, man, not to talk smack or anything, but I just feel like there's such a, I mean, heads are down. That, you know, our generation, we're millennials, which is an unfortunate thing in a lot of ways, but there's a lot of good development with some millennials in a lot of ways. But I will say that like the heads are down, just people are so focused on spending and there's just so much just rush, not focusing on like the smallest things in life that really matter, the most important things, the family, the, you know, that taking a moment to look into the things. I sit on the balcony and I stare at the stars and stuff sometimes. And I'm like, this is so cool.
It's true. There's so many amazing things that we have the privilege to be involved with every day. And we're so worried about the next job or the next event or the next. And not that we don't have to have jobs and we have to do events and we have to go places and we have schedules and clocks, but they don't have to drive us. I mean, we can live in the moment. There's magic there. And you're not just a physical object in space.
And I'll tell you what, Tim, like we start seeing those mysteries that we talk about when you start doing that. You start relaxing and getting away from the big lights of the city and stuff like that. That's when I've seen the things I've seen. And I'll tell you, like, it's a thing. It's definitely a thing. And I feel like the older generations, like this old civilizations, right? They would draw UFOs on their rock sides, and they would draw, right? And so they were seeing things that they couldn't also explain, but we're seeing them. But it's just it's a different feel. It's like we're trying to suppress it in some way without even meaning to, you know.
I go into this in the book, because this is important. And one of the great characters in the book is a Native American, and he challenges the Caucasians, and they said, well, why don't we have this thing in the zoo? And he said, you don't have this in the zoo because it doesn't want to be in the zoo.
Wow. Yeah. You said he's like an elder, right? Like kind of
an elder. Yeah. I mean, he's a fictional character. But the whole idea is that the reason the Native Americans didn't explain everything is because they didn't think everything needed to be explained.
Yeah. Good point.
And we don't need to explain everything. Okay. We should try. It should be the normal part of our curiosity to try to understand things better. But it doesn't have to involve the pride of having to know everything.
Why do you think we're doing this show? We're trying to get some answers. But it's funny, as we do it, it's like it's more questions and answers constantly. It's like you figure something out, and then more questions pop up.
There's
it's
more
like
questions. Yeah, and that's almost always when you learn something, you always learn more about what you don't know.
That segues into one of my questions for you, Tim. Honestly, like, this was one of the things I was thinking of, and it's just funny that we're going into this and we just riff, right? It just makes sense. We just fall into it. That's how this world is.
Yeah.
But oftentimes, you know, there's all these mysteries, like the mystery word that you use, it's like, it's mentioned in your book. It's a catalyst for a lot of the things that intrigue you, right? I feel like it's a big pool. Like, once you start looking into things, it's like everything just kind of falls into the same spot. It's almost like a creator, our creator, whoever it is, was, you know, however you want to believe that, has it set up to where we're just maybe not meant to know how it all will tie together. But for some reason, it kind of like goes into that same vein. You know, all these different things, the Mothmans, the Dogmans, the Bigfoots, the UFO thing, the ghost paradigm, all these different things, right? It's almost like, is it because we're living in my theory is maybe we're living in a three dimension, and there's like a fourth or fifth dimension. That's where a lot of these things kind of sit in a lot of ways. What's your theory on that? Like, why is it so we're so close yet so far? We're getting so close and it all goes into the same pool, but then it's like, we still don't really know.
Well, I'll answer that, but I'm going to tell you a story first, if you don't mind. I have always felt, when I was a kid, I just loved Star Trek. I still do. I just love the idea of traveling space. And I've always felt just inside a little bit disappointed that I was never going to get to visit other planets. Probably, you know, I guess it could happen, but probably I'm not going to. And I was walking down the hill, and I was just doing a walk with my wife, and I was looking down at these trees at the bottom of the hill, and the sun was shining on them. And it was just one of those moments that we were talking about, where I just felt connected to the universe, and not just seeing a view, but being part of the view. It was just, it just happens once in a while. And at that instant, I thought to myself, being connected, I'm experiencing the same connection with the universe here on Earth with that tree, seeing that tree and sensing that tree as I would if I was on a planet in another galaxy. It's the same universe. It's the same God. And I can't experience it there, but I can experience here. And if you experience the God that created the universe, then that's kind of experiencing the universe, even though you can't go to places 92 million light years away yet.
Really cool. And the way that just illustrated that, because there's been times that I've had those same feelings, and I know a lot of our listeners have too. And yeah, it's exactly, that was a really well way of putting that.
It's just that if we should think less about figuring it all out, find to want to figure it out, find to be curious. That's a gift also of who we are. But just enjoy being part of it. I think if we learn to enjoy being part of it, we'll judge it less, and we'll maybe be more receptive to hearing things. You know how when you're tired and you can't think of anything anymore, and you just put it down and go away or take a nap or go to sleep or just rest, and then suddenly you start getting answers?
Yes, exactly.
I think if we were less demanding that it be done our way and that it meet these specifications and we get it in this amount of time and we make this much money, I mean, how can God teach us anything with those demands?
Right.
It's the ones that are willing to seek, right? Yeah. It's seek and you shall receive, like seek and you shall find. It's exactly that. And honestly, it's a small percentage, man. I feel like it's a small percentage of us that are willing to even look into this stuff. Like, let me ask you this. Does your wife, is she jiving on this stuff, or does she get annoyed by it? Or is she, what's she thinking?
My wife takes me with a grain of salt. Okay. She is more, she just doesn't want to, she's just not into Bigfoot at all. Okay. She is spiritual. She is open to talking about spiritual things, but she's a little more down to earth. I'm a little bit more mystical and cosmic on the whole thing, and she's a little bit more earth centered. So we don't relate on all of it, but I know she believes in God and she trusts God, and some of it we just I've learned with Bigfoot that I only bring it up when I think people are open to talking about it without either getting mad or without laughing or getting frustrated. So that's kind of,
yeah, I think your wife is the same way as mine. She's like, okay, you know, there's certain things she's like, I can understand, you know, ghosts. I can understand like demons or whatever. Right. But Bigfoot, she's like, I'm not so sure. And I'm like, what the heck? There's so many
how are you not sure
eyewitnesses that are credible, like police officers and ambulance people and, you know, military and all this kind of stuff, right? Teachers that are seeing this stuff. And I don't know, but I've been trying to educate her a little bit more because I think that's part of it too. She's just not as educated on it. But it's funny. I relate to you on that.
You got to, when you know the facts and you're open to them, it's hard not to believe in the thing.
Well, and Tim, I think this, like, I'm single right now, obviously dating somebody, but at the same time, you know, I see it from the outside. And I think a lot of this stuff it's very easy for people to be ignorant, and ignorance is bliss, right? And when they start bringing it out in the open, this whole UFO or whatever, UFP, whatever they want to call it right now, there's this thing now where everybody believes in that. Everyone should believe in it. They're talking about it in the government now, and there's all this stuff happening, right? Which we've never.
Now I'm starting not to believe it.
Right.
So yeah.
Because the government's bringing it up. Now I'm starting to, well, what was I doing wrong?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good point.
So now everybody believes in it, right? If they didn't before, in a lot of ways. And that's just like how civilization, I feel like, is. But then there's the few of us that are like, look, I was right on that, man. Like 20 years ago, I feel like I was right on that. Now it's finally coming out, you know? And it's like, I don't know if we're all going to have that luxury to see all these things come to fruition. And we may never know, like the Bigfoot thing. And we may never know what all this is tied together. But I think it's good for us to just to share it, try to be open to it and have people see what's going on here as best they can, you know?
Yeah, I think that's all we can do. But when they start telling me that there's crashed alien craft, and they think I'm happy with just that. I don't know. No, where are they? Where do they look like? Let me see the pictures. Let me see the bodies.
Exactly. Right.
Don't come out with this stuff and then just stop. It's like making dinner and having you smell it, but not allowing you to eat it.
Yeah, the one that got me was the Vegas part, man. When they're in Vegas and they get that phone call. I don't know. You've probably heard the famous phone call.
I heard it. I just didn't take it for serious. But
yeah, I struggle with it too because I'm just not sure. It's like now there's 9-foot creatures outside somebody's backyard, and he's very calm when he's saying it. And I don't know. I'm very leery of a lot of these things that are out in the open, and I feel like there's a purpose behind it, some bigger purpose, some kind of big what do you call it, illusion of some sort. Who knows? But we'll see. You know, my mind is, you know, let's just stick to the facts. Let's stick to what we know is true. And
it's just like Bigfoot. If you see one, there's something else going on. So you better be aware of what's going on all around you. And with this thing, something else is going on.
Right. Good point. Yeah, exactly.
It may very well be a distraction of something. I don't know. But I'm not going to – they're not answering my questions. I don't know whose questions they're answering, but they're not answering mine. I want to see the body. I want to see the pictures. I want to see the spacecraft. I want to know where they came from.
Right.
Let me ask
you
this.
Who doesn't want to know that? How can someone in Congress not be answering that?
Let me ask you this, Tim. Do you think that, because I am of the mindset that they've probably had multiple. I mean, if you're saying they're running across roads, these Bigfoot, right? These Sasquatch creatures, they're running across roads, right? I believe, and we actually had an occurrence here that we can get into here in a sec, but I believe that there's stuff happening and they've probably had multiple creatures found. So every time I hear in these podcasts where it's like, we just need to have a body, then we'll have proof and stuff.
Yeah, there's plenty of bodies.
That's all well and good, but what about, they're not going to show those bodies to us yet. They're not ready to give that information.
You just go to a veterinarian or two and say, I ran over this gorilla and I've got it in my refrigerator. What should I do? And see how long it takes someone to come looking.
They'll come full gear, SWAT type gear and stuff, they'll
come. But someone's going to find out. If you get that veterinarian to believe it, someone's going to come looking.
Speaking of that, have you heard of have you ever heard the story of the Battle Mountain incident, the fire in Nevada?
Yeah.
And that Bigfoot creature that kind of came out of the fire. We covered it on one of our podcasts, and it was that one just sticks with me for some reason because it's amazing. But they took the thing away after they administered some medical treatment. Right. Exactly. So yeah.
And honestly, have you seen the Mount St. Helens one? Have you heard the Mount St. Helens
one? I have. Yeah.
After the eruption.
Yes.
And they were working with them. They were talking to them.
So they must understand. I mean, the Battle Mountain one was crazy because there was a native lady who was part of the ambulance crew that was trying to help out. And
yeah, I remember hearing about that. I listened to someone just recently.
Yeah, she said the language it was speaking was almost like a dialect of Navajo or something. And how were the Mount St. Helens ones being able to speak to them unless it was all telepathic or something?
It sounded like they knew how to speak the language, that someone had learned the language.
Wow.
Yeah. One of us had learned their language.
Crazy. So let me ask you this. This is kind of going back to your back to reality just a little bit. But let me ask you this. You have colleagues, I'm sure, that probably know you're maybe a little bit vocal about some of this stuff. You remind me of Jeff Meldrum maybe a little bit in that regard. Do you get a lot of pushback from the academic world, academia? No,
I'm not. But if I was at a university, I would.
Okay.
If I was at a Huffy Puffy elitist private school, I might, but I doubt it. And today I think the reason it's a big deal in the universities is because of the grant money, and everybody's afraid if they offend someone, they won't get their grant money.
It's
all driven by the love of money.
So do you have,
that in high school or it in high schools, and it's reflected in different ways. It's mostly tuition payers, and they just they're not worried about someone believing in Bigfoot.
Right. So you've never had any threats from colleagues or from administration or anything saying, hey, you need to stop saying this stuff.
Well, I don't, it's like I said, I don't go out of my way to make a big deal out of it. If somebody asks me about it, I answer them. And if they ask me more, I answer more. But I don't go out of my way doing it. I think I'm there to teach kids history, not to promote Bigfoot. Although I think at one school, I asked if we could do a Bigfoot club, and they thought it was fun when it was just fun. But when they started to get the idea that I really believed it, I think they started having some doubts. But I didn't stay there very long, and that may have been part of it, but I never suspected that. Just a possible connection, but that was a strange lady there that was running.
I'm glad for you that that's not been a thing, because I think there's probably others that have had a lot of issues that have tried
it's possible. And I'm sure that has been at the university, but that's mostly because of money.
Right. Gotcha. So you're in Texas. So have you heard of Josh Turner and Paranormal Roundtable? I think it's called their podcast.
No, I haven't.
Those guys are cool. They're out in Austin area. The guy's name, he goes by Wolf, and he hosts a show, and his name's Josh Turner, but he goes by Wolf.
I'd love to hear more about it. I'd love to get to know him or meet him.
I'll send you his just his profile so you can link up and maybe start talking to him, because the coolest thing with his show and with him, and just because we'll lead into this, but I know we kind of talked off air and you were talking about, Texas and the local area and stuff. And they've got so many stories that are coming out of that area, especially Austin, just from locals. And it's really, really impressive. Like some of the stuff that the crazy, this, you know, stuff you'd never, ever, you know, anticipate. But yeah, I'll give you his stuff because it'll be fun for you to link up with him. And
I'd love to connect. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
But yeah, Tim, so real quick, so just to kind of go back to that other, you know, how they probably found a body, they probably have multiple bodies, blah, blah, blah. The reason I say that is because when we were driving through a canyon here in Utah, it's a Spanish Fork Canyon, a really pretty area. We were heading up to a campsite, kind of Schofield, Utah. It's an old mining town. We actually did a podcast about that too, because it was a big mining disaster. But yeah, as we were driving up there, there was a huge stop on the road up the canyon, right? There was like just a massive stop, and we're trying to figure out what was going on. It was just traffic everywhere. And I saw all these cars, these vans parked on the side. And I don't remember what they said on the vans, but it was like it seemed like a government style van. And there was people coming out and they were walking around across the roads and different things. And then all of a sudden we look over to the right and there's this helicopter, and it's like on the other side of the canyon, but you can see it kind of coming through the canyon. And it has like a big, it looked like it was carrying a person or something, like something, an animal, you know, when they like transport an animal or a person and they're in like a big, big kind of hammock thing underneath and it's hanging down.
Yeah. So
that's what it was doing. And it was a black marked helicopter. And it went across to another canyon and then it just disappeared. And then all of a sudden the traffic was flowing again. But there was like literally 20, 30 of these workers running around looking like the world was ending right there. And there wasn't a fire. There wasn't anything super, super crazy that I could tell. So I was thinking, man, are they trying to cover up a dead Bigfoot over here? Like what happened? It looked like a big creature in there. And so that's my theory, is that they're over here obviously covering up things they want to cover up. We're starting to be more privy of this as time's going on with the media and things that are going on with the government and stuff. So
I'm tired of the government thinking that I need to be protected.
Me too. I'm with you.
I think it's time to put their big boy pants on and start acting like adults and treating us like adults too. I'm really tired of it. I'm insulted by it. And I'm personally insulted by what they've brought out on UFOs.
Right.
And I can't believe the senators can look themselves in the mirror and be happy with this.
Right. Absolutely. Same thing. We think the same way all the time. It's like, okay, you guys are just releasing stuff for like, you know, people who are just not, I don't know. It's just, it's too simple. And then they leave it at that. They go nowhere with it. It's And then you can't even ask questions. It's ridiculous.
I watched a little bit of it, just enough to know that it wasn't worth watching it anymore. And even the two representatives that seemed to be leading it, it was hard not to think they looked for the least intelligent ones or the least capable ones to lead it, because they were asking the wrong questions. They didn't really know what they were doing. They were disorganized. They seemed confused. And I'm thinking, that's the best you could find to lead this investigation or question these. It just, I'm sorry. I mean, I know that you're not going to find 425 really capable, talented congressmen, but you could find a few, right? The biggest question in the history is that there's life on other planets visiting us. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Maybe you could get one of your better senators to look into that.
So what do you think? What do you think the big pick? Because you brought up before on one of the other podcasts I heard you on, I think it was Shane Jones' podcast, and you said you brought up the microcosm of a macrocosm, you know, Bigfoot being just that, and that there's a bigger picture situation going on. What do you think that bigger picture is, especially when it comes to these cryptids and stuff? Like, is it, what's the reason? What is the reason they're hiding it? The logging industry or something else?
No. I mean,
that's dumb.
The spotted owl almost killed the logging industry.
Right.
Over a spotted owl, if they cared about the logging industry, would they have done that? I think that's a little bit of a red herring. But I think it goes back to the materialist, the desire to make a materialistic universe, make that the reality. What you see, taste, touch, smell, and hear is the reality, and not allow people to go beyond that. I think that's because you can sell it.
Yeah.
There's profit in it. And I know that a lot gets covered up, so it's hard to to say with definitive proof that there are things behind, for example, Tesla. Tesla was doing a lot of stuff with energy, but it wasn't energy you could make money on. It was actually free energy. Free energy would do a lot for us, but it would destroy a lot of industries that make a lot of money off making us need them. And what if there is a way to have free energy? Well, yeah. I could see why they would suppress that. What if it's related to us understanding that we do have an impact on reality when we observe it, when we measure it? If you understand quantum physics and the measurement principle, you realize we don't understand it completely. When I say understand, I mean if you're aware of it. We don't understand it completely, but to some degree, when we observe or measure reality, it collapses into physical reality. It's the collapse of the wave function. It goes from being energetic waves to physical photons.
Tall frequency.
Yeah, into free. Yeah. And if it may very well be that we have more power over things than we think. There's a spiritual nature to it all. There's a immaterial nature to it all that transcends three-dimensional reality. Three-dimensional reality is space. It's width, height, and depth. And then you add space, time to it, which is the fourth dimension. That gives you four-dimensional reality. But M theory is brought out for the purpose of trying to bring Einstein's theories in connection with quantum theory and being able to figure out the math, make the math talk to each other. That believes there's multiple dimensions. There could be 11 dimensions, and there could be 7 or 8 additional universes as the size of this one or bigger. And a lot of that is those dimensions. Who knows what's going on there? So I just think we limit ourselves so much by making it fit into what we can see, taste, touch, smell, and hear. And we can't see, taste, touch, smell, and hear 99.9% of reality.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch, that show. I don't know if you're up to date on that, what's going on with
it. I watch a little bit of it, but if it's on TV,
You have to doubt it, right? You have to question it and stuff.
A little bit. I mean, a little. I don't want to criticize everything that's on TV, but I just take things with a grain of salt.
That's the very best way to be. And you know, Travis, the scientist guy that's on that show, he was heading the research projects and with NASA and stuff, you know, with when it comes to UFOs and stuff. So you kind of got to wonder, you know, if he's somehow getting fed stuff from the government that, you know, to kind of hijack what's really going on and stuff. You got to wonder about that. And I wonder why they trust him sometimes over there, even though he's a really good, seems like a good guy. But they're really focusing heavily on like frequency and, you know, on one of the recent episodes, they had like a lost time event where they had like a lost couple seconds of time and they measured it and stuff. And like, how did that happen? You know, that makes no sense. As far as, you know, science, they've never been able to record something like that, according to them, which could just be TV. But it was pretty cool. Pretty interesting. I'm like,
the lost time phenomenon is very interesting.
Yeah. Actually, we're doing so this show is going to come out after podcast 38, which is about lost time. So you're going to be 39, cool. 38 is about lost time. So hopefully you'll tune into that and listen to that, because okay, we did a show on it.
Have you ever done anything on portals?
That'll be 40.
I'm listening to that because I'm interested in some of that in my sequel. So I'm starting to try to study it. So if you know any good sources to research for things like that, I'd be love to hear it.
I will say, Tim, when we're in Ivins, Utah, it's a very heavy Native American lore culture area. Red Rock, really beautiful Southern Utah kind of feel. We were down there just kind of hanging around. We heard that there's going to be some petroglyphs on some of the rocks and stuff, right? So, but some of them are hard to find. Some of them aren't like very easy. It's not like there's a civilized version where you can just walk down a little path and see some of them right there. But other ones are kind of hidden.
It's not like a public tourist thing. It's like, you just got to kind of explore and you may find something.
So we're going down a couple areas. We climb down one little cliff and we climb down another little cliff. And all of a sudden we see what looks like a symbol of a portal. It's that spiral that they do on a rock, you know, a perfect like six line spiral or something. We took a picture of that. We posted on our Instagram. So that's on our Supernatural Station Instagram page, a little further in. And then we posted another one. It was literally like just a couple knots down the walkway there. And I had a sense about it. I was standing on the top of the rock and I'm looking at my brother Roman. I'm like, I feel like there's a petroglyph over here somewhere. And I literally just jumped off the rock and went down in this little clearing. And all of a sudden there was another one with a portal just like that. And you can tell they're very old, very. So I think that's a portal symbol because I've seen that from a lot of Native American tribes. It's weird because if you go right behind that, where those rocks are, you know, where those portals are on the rocks, you can't go there. It's a native area where you literally can't go into it. It's all fenced off and there's some guys, you know, sort of blocking it in a way. And it had a weird, mysterious feel about it when you're looking through it from on top of the cliff. And there's a spot that kind of looked like a portal from up there. It was just a weird spot. So yeah, we definitely think about that stuff quite a bit.
Well, I wonder if there isn't ability of maybe some of these animals to go into portals and then come out and go in. And it's just a fact, and that more and more science is demonstrating at least the theoretical possibility of some of that. So yeah. I'm not saying they know how to do it or anything, or will for a long time, but.
Well, a lot of Bigfoot experiences that come out, like people that have seen Bigfoot, they'll have what they describe is almost like a predator thing, kind of, you know, around the creature, like almost like you see that mirage kind of look above a fire, that type of thing.
And the light too, right. The light. They're often associated with lights, and there's a lot of that in the Big Thicket, lights and stuff. So it just seems like the place to introduce some of that and keep the story going. Yeah. Anyway, that's an idea. So I'm curious about anything you have found or see or good research.
We'll send you a lot of stuff. We'll keep communication with you because we want to try to help you with some of our knowledge, and we'd love to get some more of your knowledge and stuff too.
Appreciate it. And if I go out there to that area with these guys, I will definitely take some video and stay in touch. There's a few shows that want to stay in touch with me on that, so I'm happy to do that with you.
Please, we love it.
Yeah, add us to the list on that. Hey, I wanted to ask you, I want to talk a little bit more about your book, if you're willing to, you know, because I think, part of the reason we're doing this show is we want to get your book out there and, you know, get the word out that you have a book and that, you know, that it's kind of based what it sounds like on a cryptid creature situation. Yeah. And we haven't read it yet, but we will. I mean, as soon as we're done with this podcast, I'm going to purchase the book and make sure I read it and stuff. But I saw that the setting of the book is Mason County, Washington. What's the reason you picked that area?
Well, about in the last 20 years or so, I started thinking that maybe if more people focused on writing fiction about this mystery and developed characters and stories, characters that were interesting and stories that were dramatic, captivating, if you could do that, maybe you could win people to this mystery, or at least being open to it through, you know, engaging their emotions and their imaginations in this subject. And because someone told me once that facts tell, but stories sell. And I thought, well, let's think about writing stories about this that would capture people's imaginations possibly. I mean, I'm not saying I did that, but that was kind of something I've been thinking is important. So I wanted to write this book, and this idea came up because my brother told me a story about 10 years ago that he saw one. And I just asked him if he ever saw anything strange in the woods. And he started telling me this story that just blew my mind. It was about being at his house, and he lives off the Hood Canal Hook on Mason County, Washington, where he bought some property to build houses on. He's a builder. And it was rural area with lots of forest. And he went out to his truck one night to fix the taillights, and he smelled something really funny, and it was kind of gross, and thought maybe something had died, and he was looking around to see what it was. And just up the hill to his left was there was a Bigfoot standing there. And it was about, like you said, about 9.5 feet tall. He knows that because he saw that its head was close to on this light pole, place on this light pole that was there. And it looked at him, and it started screaming at him. I mean, you smell it, you see it, and then it starts screaming at him. Okay. So it was mad at him, or it was threatened by him, or it was trying to threaten him, and it scared him to death. And he ran for his house and got into his house and grabbed his shotgun and looked back out the window. He was sure it was coming for his house. And it was still standing there, and it just stopped screaming, turned around, and walked back in the woods. And he never saw it again. But he was scared to death, and he didn't want to tell people because he was afraid they would laugh at him. He was almost afraid that I was not believing him because I was asking him a bunch of questions because I'd never heard him tell me this story to have someone you know all of a sudden tell you a story this dramatic. I just wanted to make sure I understood it completely. And so, but he's sensitive to it. Now he's more open, and I've got him to come on podcast. So he's more open now to talk about it. But at first he was afraid people would laugh at him.
Jeez. So that's why you picked that area, because I mean, obviously they're out there.
Yeah. I just figured, well, I'm going to use this as my inspiration to get started. So I just based it around that area, but I went back to the 70s. Because the reason it's the tomato fields, they used to dump sewage, the raw sewage, in this field back there. They would haul it out in the trucks and squirt it out in a hose. And that was before they got a sewage plant and had some laws that called for different ways of disposing of it. But as a result, there was a lot of vegetable seeds that came from human waste and grew into vegetables. And there was a lot of vegetables that grew wild out in this area that where they did this. And Joe kind of called it the tomato fields, kind of a slang term. And so he said that would be a good name for the book. So I just ran with it. And it is interesting. And most people who have an artistic bent to them like it. Some of the more cool black and white people, black and white thinkers, tend to say, well, what do tomatoes have to do with Bigfoot? So, but for a lot of people really like it, and there's kind of an artsy nature to it. So anyway.
Have you ever been out that way? Like, have you ever been out to Mason County?
Yes, I've been in Mason a lot. We went there and looked for some signs for Bigfoot, and we found a few things that were mysterious. But and he's taken me out and shown me the area that used to be the tomato fields. Now it's just acres and acres of green. If you look on my Instagram, there's a video of it. I can send it to you.
Oh yeah. And we'll check it out. I think we just recently started following you. So we'll check it out for sure. That's really cool. I've heard that story before. I don't know if it was on a documentary or somewhere where about the whole, you know, the tomato seeds that came from.
That's how it happened. And we take a license, a fictional license, okay, to exaggerate when necessary. But the point is to make the story interesting and captivating. And I just built the story around that, just imagined and made things up. And tried to develop interesting characters and put them in situations where they weren't ever thinking they would be, and they weren't comfortable at all, and forcing them to come to resolutions that required them to fix something and fix it quick. And it just forced people into situations that made them think different.
Well, I'm really excited to read it. We'll definitely check it out and let you know our thoughts on it and stuff. And for all our listeners, go out and look it up. I mean, where's the best place for them to find the book?
Easy to find because it's easy to remember, Tomato Fields. And my name is Tim Moon, which is the moon up in the sky. So it's unfortunately an easy name to remember because I can never remember other people's names, but they always remember mine. So if you just put in Tomato Fields, if you go to Amazon, it's all on Amazon. Everything's Amazon right now. And you can just put in Tomato Fields and Tim Moon, it comes right up. Might even do that on a Google search now. And then it's available paperback. It's available on electronic if you like ebooks. You can also read it on Kindle Unlimited, which is if you pay a certain amount every month, you can read books for free. So those are the three options right now. And I'm looking into doing an audio version. Like, you know, we talked about that a little bit, but that would be nice if we could do that.
Yeah, I mean, we hope everybody goes out and gets the book, whichever method they like the most. And what other projects, if you want to give a little moment to tell the listeners any other projects you might be working on, if you have some.
Yeah, I'm working on two of them, but they're really in the infant stages, in the research stages. And the one is the sequel to Tomato Fields, which will be in the setting in Texas in the big thicket area. And if people don't know that, that's just a wildlife preserve north of Houston that is very massive, very mysterious, and has a lot of weird paranormal type stuff going on.
I'll be ashamed if our listeners don't know about the Big Thicket.
Well, they may. Everybody doesn't, but I just in case, I thought I'd mention that. I also work a lot in the recovery community, and I'm writing a book on recovery that's more a novel again about person's story than it is a nonfiction book. So that's kind of what I'm working on. Both of them are in their infant stages right now. So I hope to have something done on at least one of them by next year.
Well, we're rooting for you, and we hope send us whenever you get stuff done, send it to us, and we'll try to blast it out to our listeners too. You know, we believe in, you know, helping others with their projects, and it's a passion thing. We'll help you out for sure where we can, and hopefully vice versa.
Everybody go follow Tim Moon on Instagram too, for sure.
Yeah, it's just look up tomato_fields. That's how I have it. It's easy to look. It's easy to find. And can I just mention one more thing about that editing issue?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay. When I was just about to the deadline of publishing Tomato Fields, I had an editor that told me that I was decided after, 75% of the book that I was using firearms unsafely. My characters were, and she didn't want to participate anymore. And without changing it, and I wasn't going to change it because I didn't think she was correct. And so I wound up having to do everything myself. Editing is not my strongest suit. That's just not my strength. I can do it, but it's not my strength. And I did the best I could, but there was still some issues, and I've edited it twice since. But I've got another editor editing it again. And hopefully I'll have all that updated in the next couple of weeks. So if you're a stickler for typos and stuff like that, and it really bothers you, I understand that. I mean, and I'm doing everything I can to fix that. So give it a couple of weeks before you buy the book. But if you don't mind that and you can live with all that, most people can. You'll like the story. You'll like the characters. You'll probably have fun with it and be able to read it real quick. It's not a long read. I think most of the reviews I'm getting are really good. I'm getting really good reviews, except for a few people who really resented that I missed some typos. Okay. I understand. Some people are like that, and I respect that. I just got stuck between a rock and a hard place, but I'm fixing it. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's great. We just want to commend you for your efforts to do all that stuff. You know, I mean, it's hard to put something out there that's a personal project. And I know it's your first novel and stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, anytime you do something, I mean, you're kind of in water you're not familiar with for a little bit too. And,
self-publishing, you're doing all this stuff on your own. You're going into some high risk areas that you're not used to being in. So everybody just give him a shout out, go look into his book. I think it's it sounds like a really cool project. I like that there's like Native inspiration. There's the Bigfoot storylines. There's a lot of, what else is in that book? Is there like other cryptids in there? Is there ghost situations? What else you got in there?
No, I didn't. I never even mentioned the Bigfoot. They call him something else. And that's why I went back to the 70s so I could get back before it became such a fad, it does. I didn't say enough that it could be paranormal. It could be flesh and blood. It could be a mix of the two. I didn't want to step on people's toes and come down hard on one side or the other of that, because I don't frankly believe one side or the other anyway.
Right.
But I wanted to give it room so people could come in with certain ideas without having me, you know, change those ideas or try to change those ideas. But if, you know, if you come in with an open mind, you might see things that change the way you look at it. But I didn't want it to be like I'm being a know-it-all and telling you how this is, because I don't think that's true.
Well, that bothers me a lot when I listen to certain people. I won't name names, but when they think they know it all about this stuff, it's like, well, I guess you got it all figured out, so why are we even talking about it? You know, I think the truth of it is nobody knows anything, so no one has wrong answers, you know, because we don't know what these things are, right?
We don't have it all figured out. And right. So if I think we know some things, but we don't know enough. And we can't be making these sweeping definitive statements about this thing because we don't know enough. And we don't have one in the zoo. So, and we're probably not going to have one in the zoo.
And that's the thing is like, there's, you know, we don't, how are we supposed to shape any advice to anybody when it comes to this, when it comes to not knowing an origin, even not knowing like DNA enough, like not knowing anything about this thing. All we know is there's little things, tidbits, right? We know there's certain things. There's the, what is it? On the foot,
mid-tarsal
bridge. Break. We already know there's that. We already know there's a tie in to sort of a woman's, human woman's DNA and a
unknown
missing DNA,
male.
Unknown.
Yeah, if all that's true, there's a connection between human beings and this thing.
But that's kind of all we know, like you're saying. So it's like it's kind of hard for us to try to, like you said, pinpoint, oh, yeah, they're just aliens coming down here. Oh, or they're just, oh, yeah, they're from a different dimension. Or, oh, yeah, they're completely a hominid. They're the one that hasn't come.
I don't think it's neatly fitting in anybody's package.
Right.
100%.
And that's part of what they don't like, because they want it to neatly fit. It doesn't.
Exactly.
Good luck.
Square in a round peg hole, you know.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a square peg or whatever. I'm confused.
Me too. Jeez, that's me every day. No, but we appreciate you, Tim. I know we're kind of near the end here. We did about an hour's worth of time with you, and we don't want to keep you too long. But we really appreciate just you spending time with us and taking.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I love talking about stuff like this. It's so important. So yeah. I'm glad we got to do it.
Us too. And we'll definitely spread. If you don't mind, we'll share the link, you know, wait till your stuff is edited, if that works for you, but we'll share the link on our page and for the book and everything. And we'll just continue that conversation.
Did I send you that podcaster sheet with the links of everything?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Cause I have the link to the book and the webs, my email and my, Instagram and Twitter, I think, on there.
Perfect. We'll share that.
You can share all of that. Okay.
Awesome, Tim. We appreciate your time.
I'm happy if people want to contact me. I'm happy to talk to you with questions or anything. Okay.
I love having like minds on the show, man. Thank you so much.
That was fun. Well, you guys have a great night. Okay.
You as well.
Thank you so much, Tim.
Enjoy the cold weather.
No way.
Get out of here with that.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Tim. Good night.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
I wanted to When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.